Good morning, everyone. My name is Tamar Tembeck, and on behalf of Media at McGill, I would like to welcome you back to this second day of our colloquium on the participatory conditions. Donc, bienvenue à tout le monde à notre deuxième journée de colloque sur la condition participative. A little reminder of the way that we are proceeding. We have assigned research delegates for each of the panels that we are holding during the participatory condition. And we've adopted the convention that the first question will be asked by members of these research delegations. And this actually came out of a student initiative who wanted to make this event on the participatory condition participatory. So for those of you who were here last night for our keynote by Raphael Lozano-Hemmer, you heard him say that participation in art is only valid if it's, I quote, out of control. This morning's panel continues the discussion on participation in art and design. And our first speaker, Rudolf Freeling, might give us some indications as to how institutions such as museums can host out of control participatory experiments. Rudolf Freeling is curator of media arts at the San Francisco MoMA. His numerous projects at the SF MoMA include the survey exhibition, The Art of Participation, 1950 to Now, and the accompanying catalog published by Thames and Hudson in 2008. Prior to joining the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, Freeling was a curator at the ZKM, Center for Art and Media in Karlsruhe, Germany, and he was head of its video collection. He also headed the online research project Media Art Net there, and organized the exhibition and restoration project 40yearsvideoart.de, Digital Heritage, Video Art in Germany from 1963 until the present. His books include Media Art Action, 1997, Media Art Interaction, 2000, and Media Art Net 1 and 2, published in 2004 and 2005. The paper he will be presenting today addresses the conditions of participation in art. And from art in the museum, we will move to art being used and worn by individuals in the form of object design, with the presentation by Graham Pullen, who is director of digital interaction design at the University of Dundee, specializing in assistive technology, augmentative and alternative communication, and critical design. Prior to joining the College of Art and Design at the University of Dundee in 2005, Pullen was senior interaction designer and studio head at the design and innovation consulting firm IDEO. His extensive experience, initially as a rehabilitation engineer in his other life, as he pointed out to me, or his prior life, and then as a industrial and interaction designer, as well as his 25-year involvement in disability-related design, informed the preparation of his monograph, which he also refers to as a manifesto, Design Meets Disability, which was published by the MIT Press in 2009. And Pullen's presentation is entitled Open Source Tones of Voice. So please join me in welcoming our two first speakers today.
Good morning. Please bear with me. I haven't had a coffee yet, so this will be a slow start. Tamar, Christine, thanks for the invite. It's been a really pleasure to be here the first day, and I'm happy to see so many here this early this morning. I also couldn't imagine a better way of introduction by Catherine Hales yesterday, telling us that there is a wide field between a truly participatory culture and the financial capital on the other end. I would say, and we can maybe argue at the end, that if you say low barriers, high impact, high identification on the one end, maybe there is a sense of an educational participatory culture on one end, and the financial capital on the other. Art tends to not be on either end of the spectrum, obviously, somewhere in this gray field in between. However, as Klaus Oldenburg would say, participatory art doesn't hang on the wall or sit on its ass. No wonder it's long been considered anathema within the institutional realm of a museum. Actually, I should start with the first image. within the institutional realm of the museum, these concepts were kept at bay by the various mechanisms of exclusion and institutional expertise that called for a controlled gallery environment inside the museum. Artists were among the first to challenge the notion of collecting finite works of art as commodities. The open and participatory work of art countered this institutional framework. In other words, they tried to eschew the pitfalls of museumification and celebrate its nature of being incollectible. There's also been, on the other end, an academic approach which characterizes participation in art as a pursuit of, quote, democratic art, unquote, only to critique then its lack of ambition outside the realm of art. Claire Bishop has recently made that argument. She also claims that this kind of participatory art, quote, rapidly becomes a highly ideologized convention in its own right, one by which the viewer in turn is manipulated in order to complete the work correctly, unquote. And she continues to call this pseudo-participation, that is, a participation that simply conditions the public. So I'm not interested in retracing neither of these two well-trodden paths. Both of them engage with a specific work on what I could call an ideological meta-level, as opposed to a close reading of the aesthetic, contextual, as well as experiential factors in a museum. I'm interested in exploring a new change in perception as evidenced by the recent search of participatory art within institutions. So on that note, I slightly changed the title, since we're talking about the participatory condition all the time anyway, to Histories in Situations of Display in Museums. So, has the institution museum changed, or has participatory art changed? Upon closer scrutiny, we now even look back at the first histories of participatory art within the museum, and Raphael made that reference yesterday as well. And the question is, what effect this has had on the dichotomy of participation in museums? that's a cell phone picture I took, so excuse the bad quality. So see, for example, the Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History. Its director, Nina Simon, proclaims the following exhibition philosophy online, quote, "If you are working with us as an artist or contributor to an exhibition, you should expect that museum staff will create multimodal, interdisciplinary, participatory, immersive, and social experiences around your work. We will invite you to engage in discussions about these exhibition elements, and if you want to be involved in brainstorming possibilities, that's fabulous. If not, that's fine too. But you should know that we will be following this philosophy in all of the exhibitions that we develop." This sounds a little bit like a threat. Believe it or not, non-participation can now become the anathema in a museum. Participation in art as a threat to the artist or the artwork? Between these two opposed parameters of institutionalized non-participation and institutionalized participation, which both testify to radical disrespect towards the condition of specific works of art, I will look at works that successfully entered a museum collection. In this case, as you can imagine, the collection of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. I will address narratives that will allow us to trace changes in participatory works from within the collecting institution. They will provide a track record that documents that these works have shaped and are continuously shaping the conditions of collecting and exhibiting in a museum that takes the art it collects seriously and not as a pretext for creative workshops. So here's a first thesis. There hasn't been a single paradigm shift or dramatic change in participatory art that helped the museum to embrace these radically different concepts of an artwork or object. Change is rather permanently at work. In fact, permanence through change is what makes participatory works fascinating. Second thesis. This change in museums has happened in dialogue with a broader shift in contemporary art. We've seen a surge of exhibitions, symposia, publications, and debates around the notion of participation in art, a discursive field from Nicolas Bourriaud in the 90s to more recent publications by Grant Kester, Claire Bishop, or Anne Dizouz has evolved around a mostly academic analysis of this art practice in relation to its social and political implications. The emphasis has been on the conceptual, categorical, political implications, and on the dichotomies of participatory art and institutions, as in institutional critique. A third thesis is that the shift has happened oftentimes framed by a limited discursive field. Can we find ways to cross over between these academic, political, media, or aesthetic concerns and trace a trajectory towards participation in art as a shared environment and discourse? And this symposium is certainly one of the best ways of doing that. A fourth and related thesis then is, it is the art museum that provides a productive platform, surprisingly, for these initiatives because it has embraced open processes and dynamic structures. So let me call the next section Histories of Change in the Museum. And I start by a rather surprising work. This Bruce Conner Looking Glass from 1964 in the collection of SFMOMA. On July 27, 1977, Bruce Conner wanted to change a work by him on loan from a private collection, which, of course, the museum refused. He wrote the following letter to Henry Hopkins, then director of the San Francisco Museum of Art. Quote, "The concept of change is basic to many of these assemblage works which I made before 1964. To accept the concept as part of the value of exhibiting the work and to forbid the artist to continue to participate in the basic aesthetic intent is a paradox I find hard to rationalize. If you accept that these works at their face value, and convey this to other people as an aesthetic concern intended by the artist, then why do you propose to accept all the changes and alternations of the past through the hands of warehousemen, vandals, ignorant manipulation, gravity, humidity, fire, conservation lab, etc., and refuse to accept the participation of the artist himself?" Unquote. What Bruce Conner was saying is that art is a process that doesn't stop at the museum's doors. Today, we're not only talking about variable objects, but also about variable dimensions and public interactions. Looking at a museum collection of media art that, by default, is variable and subject to change, 50 years after Nam June Paik first exhibited interactive interventions by the public into televised programs, we now look back at a substantial history of presentations of variable works of art with changing displays and interfaces, taking the changes in technology as a given, because that's not the topic here, obviously. I'm focusing on works that go beyond these technological conditions and unfold their variable presence in space and over time as an integral part of their original concept, as opposed to the circumstances of negligence, destruction, and conservation lapse as dramatized by Bruce Conner. Review, reinstall, reperform. In media art, we've similarly seen the rise of the conference series on histories of media art from Refresh 2005 to Renew 2013, which were all based on the prefix re. While the notion of reinstalling a work is generally accepted, the term reperform has been widely criticized in the academic world, among others by Amelia Jones here from Montreal, responding to the notorious Marina Abramović show in 2010. While this is a much needed critical dialogue, we equally need a discourse around the renewed relevance of a whole genre that seemed to have been allocated firmly to the history of the 1970s. These histories of performance art had found their way into exhibitions and the permanent collection only as documents or visual records, which over time came to represent the art itself. I, for example, as part of the Art of Participation, exhibited two monitors of two performances by Yoko Ono of her famous cut piece, one from 1965 and the other one from 2001, I believe. Take, for example, Erwin Wurm. These shortcomings have been addressed more recently through a different approach to exhibition making, which has pushed the boundaries of a museum collection to embrace both performances as well as performative works in dialogue with the permanence of a collection of objects. A performative presence can now be attributed to exhibitions. We have thus moved from performance to performativity, and more generally from contemplation to experience and or. In other words, exhibitions of contemporary art are often defined by the notion of instability and change. I call this process the experience of a presence over time, and here it is, thus, a one-minute sculpture by Erwin Wurm. Even the historic parameters which serve to frame... I'm not going to go really into the specifics of the work because this would take me too long. Suffice it to say that here you have tools with which you can perform differently with a given instruction, an object as a sculpture, for a minute or as long as you can do it. Even the historic parameters which serve to frame a museum experience have evaporated. The boundaries between a public program or educational intervention and the permanence of exhibition display have fallen, producing a series of hybrid collection presentations. Folding the tradition of the fine arts and the performing arts into each other's respective contexts is also a fairly recent phenomenon. As of MoMA, and I curated a show for As of MoMA last summer, for example, was called Stage Presence, Theatricality in Art and Media. And of course, currently on view, so to speak, in New York, the series of Performer, the biennial in New York, as a series of artist interventions into the classic domain of the performing arts. Translating into the now. It is through the reinstallation of variable formats that a shift in perception takes place, a shift that first and foremost produces a difference as a precondition for an expanded understanding of the work. The specific conditions of a participatory work at the time it first got acted out have dominated the discourse in the past. Today, we realize that some of these works from the 1960s have re-emerged as significant precursors to contemporary concerns. Marta Minujín was Raphael's example yesterday. My curatorial question is, does a piece from 1969 become a historic artifact when seen again in 2008? Or does it reaffirm its presence and relevance in relation to now? One of my most cherished historical documents as a curator and scholar has always been Hans Hake's News from 1969, which was first exhibited in Germany as part of Prospect 69 as a one... you could say one feed, news feed, German news, into the gallery, which was then transformed by Hake for the following show in 1970 at MoMA, as part of the information show, into five news feeds into the gallery, with obviously American news. And then we reinstalled the work in 2008 as a kind of opening statement to the Art of Participation. Once again, it seems to be one news feed, but as a matter of fact, now the conditions have changed. This is 2008, and we had 12 RSS online feeds into the show, curated by the artist himself, covering a global range of news sources from the US to Europe to Russia and China. So these gradually emerging histories over time, one could posit, are not written by unearthing and looking back at documents, but by experiencing the work again and again under different conditions. By generating different configurations, possibly even a different aesthetic experience, the work in question address their contextual presence from the very beginning and still affect the audience. Here you see a few more images. It still is based on a printer that feeds a dot matrix printer. So that is a technical concern for the future. And here you see people browsing through the news, which it so happened ran parallel to the inauguration, the election of Barack Obama in 2008. So it was highly relevant. What is needed now as a condition of art historical comparative analysis is to experience participatory work through a series of acts of translation from one space into another, from one time into another, and from one context into another. Collections in museums offer the actualization and reception of a second, third, or fourth installation in relationship to a specific place, time, and context. The definition of news might change, but not the fact that we are dependent on what is happening right now. We are also conditioned by what others feed us into the gallery. But how does one collect and install histories of change, indeterminacy, and participation, be it from the outside through news agencies or from the inside through visitors' interactions? And can one exhibit these conditions of change in a way that offers a deeper understanding of these often invisible traits of a work? The example above also implies a crucial shift in documenting works, covering a wide field from the process of a shared memory with the artist to the track record of changing displays. Yet my argument with regards to processual and time-based works is that the document also needs to be thought of as a variable, dynamic form, where not only the voices of the artist and the institution are tracked, but where also the public's contribution to and experience of a work is collected and documented. This process of complex interactions goes beyond the definitions of cybernetic feedback to include playful and chance events to occur, driven as much by the concept or software of the work on display as by the seemingly arbitrary events that impact and contribute to our understanding of a work. The unfolding of meaning display. And now we come to what Raphael was talking about yesterday. Robert Morris, Body Space Motion Things at the Tate. From a short-termed exhibition closed due to visitors' wild interactions out of control and injuries to a pop-up event in a space like the Turbine Hall. It is a key moment in the history of participatory art that Morris' notorious exhibition at the Tate in 1971 closed after the disruptive engagement of the public at the time of its first showing in 1971 and then re-emerged and got restaged as a three-day event. Before, it was billed as an exhibition that only lasted 3 days. Now it was a three-day event framed as such. I'm pointing this out as a significant shift which circumvents the institutional problems of realizing a participatory exhibition in the gallery by framing it as a public event in the appropriate space, which also accordingly can be controlled much more easily. But could physical intervention possibly generate a different, more poetic use of a work? Let me quote two different examples that might shed a light on the question. This is a stack piece from our collection by Felix Gonzalez Torres. I witnessed personally how the public can interact with something as simple as a poster from a stack piece. What is clearly meant to be a free takeaway, although many museums deliberately leave the public in the dark about this concept for purely practical reasons, it became a different situation in the context of the art of participation. The instruction, "Please take a poster," was the only stated instruction. We had anticipated that visitors would be grateful for a confirmation that this trespassing of unwritten museum laws was in fact allowed. We also wanted to gently remind them not to excessively exploit the offering by taking many posters or all of them. So what I saw, for example, was that visitors folded the poster into a sculptural piece of a paper airplane to let it swerve through space. It begs the question to what extent it makes us think differently about the piece, which in this case depicts a gray sky with a lonely bird in flight. Obviously, most visitors just took a poster. Here's the second example. It involves a Bay Area artist, Stephanie Siyuko, whose practice is based on the deconstruction of the art object as a commodity. She happened to have a show in a commercial gallery across the street from the museum. Each day, she would take a few posters and restack them in her own space, dedicated to the notion of replication. Over time, she gathered a considerable stack and displayed it unannounced in her own show. An act of tongue-in-cheek stealing as a creative homage. So how does the museum respond when posters are not only taken and redistributed, but sometimes folded, thrown, trashed, etc.? All the writings about González Torres focus almost exclusively on the dominant narrative of loss, AIDS, post-minimalist concepts. It is time to also talk about the public's effects on the work. Is the invitation to participate a free pass, or are there only a different set of strings attached, which would suggest what Claire Bishop calls a pseudo-participation, that is, a correct response to the invitation? Can we make a judgment based on the fact that this is a poster that should be posted instead of thrown as a paper plane? I find this actually a productive discussion, and I don't have an answer either way. It helps to establish an understanding of what responsive and possibly responsible might mean for the museum under the conditions of a specific work and situation. What has become clear, though, is that the Do Not Touch sign for works meant to be touched, taken, redistributed is now out of the question. That would be an unresponsible act of museum display. The work requires the museum to invite participation publicly and proactively. I can also quote another example. There was a huge show at MoCA, Los Angeles, called WAC, about feminist art, and they included Luja Clark's Rede Elastico, which is a rubber band net, which was hanging on the wall, clearly avoiding any notion of participation in the museum, and we placed it on the floor, indicating that people could add rubber bands to the net and also play with it in any way, which also generated some unruly behavior in the galleries, actually. Something's happening in the here and now. One cannot simply hang the work. One must watch it carefully as it unfolds in the galleries. In short, one has to stay attentive and involved, not just when a situation occurs, but as a situation that is being experienced constantly, and the role of social media as a document of what's happening in the galleries has become a more and more crucial point of reference to learn about the effects of an exhibition. So how do you talk or write about a work critically that you haven't experienced at all? And how do we deal with the concerns that the presence of a work is not only tied to its effects on an individual or community as expressed in their responsive actions, but also in the way it is displayed aesthetically. Even when a visitor is experiencing a work on view and not a document of an event, what presence might mean then is still a key question for creating histories of participatory art. So, since I'm slightly running out of time, let me fast forward here. Lynn Hirschman Leeson's Agent Ruby is an online project, agentruby.net, commissioned by SF MoMA in 2002 and accessioned in 2008. It is not only an ongoing online work that requires your interaction and chat with the agent. It is also an archival log file, conversations over 12 years, which were accessioned by the museum as an integral component of the conceptual software-based work of art of a chat window. A work in continuous expansion mode, from the pile in Hawker's News to a growing file, But this work is not just actively collecting information, it generates information and adapts to things learned. So what we did was we exhibited not only the online access, but we also exhibited 12 years of conversations, of effects of the work in the gallery this spring as a closing show of the museum. Dora Garcia, Instant Narrative, a performance work from 2006. You see a writer in the far right. This is a pretty dark picture, though, here. There's a writer sitting at a desk in the far right corner of the gallery. On the left, you see a projection of a white blank wall where text appears, the instant narrative of the title. Writers are observing in real time events in the museum. Thus, it is a narrative produced by looking at and interacting with the present public and creating a written record of this interaction. And there are hundreds of interactions that shape the narrative continuously. Plus, we had 100 different performers interpreting that task to observe the gallery events differently, different, let's say, literary styles. Finally, I'm rushing a little bit through this now, Harold Fletcher and Miranda July's Learning to Love You More, an internet platform from 2002 to 2009, which we acquired in 2010, and it includes 70 public assignments by more than 8,000 contributors, and has then included, this is the display that we showed in 2011, also done by Stephanie Siyuko, who transformed all contributions into one continuous display of files that unfold over time. Since it is a closed participatory work now, the participation moves into the realm of display and asks for collaboration with artists, groups of artists, or others each time it is reinstalled. But the notion that one could take Learning to Love You More as a toolbox for different displays was actually inscribed into the work itself by saying immediately that it is an online project and a series of public displays. As you can see, it produced a series of very different displays, some very, very small. The smallest was actually contribution to the Whitney Biennial as just one audio file in the elevator of the Breuer Museum in New York, only when the elevator was rising. So it was like the most minimalist representation of the whole work, which still is in its complete form online. So finally, from the museum out into the world, and that's my last chapter. There is the sense that the museum collects. However, we can also argue that now the museum produces. And going back to my initial thesis, let me now say that the examples shown here clearly demonstrate not only the performativity that is at the core of their concept and materiality, but it's also a core requirement of the collecting institution. In this case, we were producing a work by installing a photo studio. The work is by a German artist called Jochen Gertz. It's called The Gift / San Francisco, and that was the third time he produced the work. It is produced by volunteers who can take a good picture. It's black and white. It's printed on site in proximity to the studio, cropped and printed. It is then stored on the left as well as exhibited on the same site. But the true and radical notion of this work came when, as we all know, the gift is a mutual social bond. People were giving their image, their portrait, one, to be seen in the museum, obviously. They took pictures of that in front of their own portraits as well, but also then to be distributed, to be redistributed to the public, to the producers of the work themselves. So on the final day of the Art of Participation, Jochen Gertz came back and distributed personally a random picture to every participant who showed up. Out of 1,900 pictures that had been taken, 800 people actually came back on that very last day. So you got a picture, and the social contract, the unwritten but clearly stated social contract, was you need to exhibit this work elsewhere. This is just one example, and here you see myself being redistributed through the streets of San Francisco. Not sure where I actually ended up. But I did, by chance, get in touch with the visitor who got my picture, and he emailed me this file afterwards. The point is, the museum is the site of production, and it redistributes the work out into the world, and it then collects this work. How is that possible? My colleagues were asking me, and I said, I don't know, but let's try it. And what we have in our collection now is a series of a database of images that we can distribute throughout the museum, represent the work through a selection of portraits. So, from an artistic and curatorial point of view, the performative work needs to be met by a responsive and performative museum. The art is neither a given nor is it permanently present stored. It emerges as a temporary act of presentation that generates material extensions and experiences in public that in turn will shape the reinstalling of the work next time. A work that produces its own history of effects and affects as a context generator. We need to embrace complexity, response, change, and most importantly, the contribution of the artist and the public. How to do this with the structures at hand is the big question of the future. Some museums take participation as a new policy, an educational or audience engagement tool to generate a social bond with clear membership implications. A responsive museum, on the other hand, adapts to the conditions posed by the artworks. It exhibits and collects, and it exhibits and collects the work that most urgently address the contemporary condition of making art. Thank you.